From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made sometime this past fall when American news media organizations received copies of a secret dossier regarding alleged ties between Donald Trump and Russia. Those ties have not been verified. The roughly 35-page report was created by a longtime British intelligence agent who is respected in the international community, but who was hired to do private work, first during the Republican primary season, then by Democrats during the general election campaign. And that report that he produced was explosive, alleging that Donald Trump had allowed himself to fall into a kind of trap, giving Russia compromising information that they could use as leverage over him, from clandestine tapes in hotel rooms to financial ties. But again, this was a report that has never been verified. It has been floating around the media sphere for several months. Last week, intelligence officials took the report seriously enough to brief both President Obama and President-elect Trump. CNN reported that the briefing happened, but CNN decided that because the details of the report had not been verified, they would not release that report to the public. BuzzFeed disagreed. Editor-in-Chief Ben Smith decided that the media could either choose not to report on this story at all, or they could report that Obama and Trump were briefed about the documents and those documents should be viewed by everyone. Smith decided that if BuzzFeed was going to acknowledge that the intelligence community was concerned about the report, verified or not, then the public should be allowed to see the documents. He wanted to be transparent. Now, many mainstream journalists have viewed this decision as a breach of journalistic ethics. They argue that if you can't verify details in a report that was created for potentially partisan reasons, then you cannot publish that report. Trump called BuzzFeed a pile of garbage. Smith is defending his call, and we decided to invite a panel of journalists to discuss it and to talk about the process of how newsrooms decide what the public should and should not see. My guests include Tiana Magnon, who is the editor-in-chief of Open Mic Rochester. Tiana, welcome back.
Thank you.
David Riley is a former government reporter and a recovering journalist from the Democrat and Chronicle. Nice to see you, David.
Same here, Adam.
Jack Rosenberry is a journalism professor at St. John Fisher College. Jack, welcome to you.
Thanks, Evan.
And Jim Memmott is a retired senior editor with the Democrat and Chronicle. He writes the remarkable Rochester column, and he's a professor at the University of Rochester. Jim, welcome to you as well.
Thanks, Evan.
Okay, I'm just going to go around the table, and Jim, I'll start with you. Simple question first and foremost. BuzzFeed puts all the documents out there. Right call, wrong call?
I'm going to argue right call.
We all just fell out of our chairs. We all just, what? That's, I mean, no, I'm,
do
this
I have
is
to
interesting.
Defend myself?
Yes,
now?
Yes, you do. No, I'm a little surprised, but that's okay. Let's talk about it. Why do you think it was a right call?
I think it was probably a tough call, and it was a call that the media probably should be, they kept it secret for 3 or 4 months, but it's going to get out. And once it gets out, people talk about it, and I think you might as well have it up online. I think that my bet is nobody's read the report. That is, you don't get very far into that. You get into the report and right away you've got Donald Trump in the hotel room. The so-called salacious details in the report. And that salacious is in the Times lead paragraph. Most of the report is fairly dull.
Yeah.
And most of the report backs up what we've already known about Donald Trump's ties to Russia, in maybe a little bit greater detail than we've seen before. So I guess if you wanted to protect your children at home, you would take out the first 3 or 4 pages. You would lose something about Donald Trump being compromised by information. But I guess I still would have put up the report. 20 years ago, I wouldn't have touched it. It would have been toxic. But it's all changed because of the internet.
And again, Jim, you're saying it would have gotten out anyway eventually.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
But why? It doesn't have to get out, does it? If we're, you know, if certain standards exist, it doesn't necessarily have to get out.
But it's bizarre. If everybody on K Street in Washington is reading that report over their cappuccino, why shouldn't someone in Des Moines read it too?
All right, David Riley.
I'm going to equivocate a bit, I guess. I think about how I would have approached it as a reporter, and I don't think I would have touched it with a 10-foot pole. And it reminds me of a lot of stories where we had a good idea of something pretty, that would have been an incredible story if we could have nailed it down, but we never were able to, and we weren't able to run with it ultimately. And sometimes the story fell apart in the long run. And it did sort of occupy a lot of conversation in the sort of local halls of power, a lot of attention of our elected officials, but we just didn't feel like it was strong enough to go with it. So as a reporter, I don't think I would have run with it. But I do think that Jim makes an interesting point, and I know I've worked with people who would see it the same way, who would have disagreed with my approach and called me overcautious, or suggested I wasn't trusting our audience enough to be able to see the document for what it was and in the proper context. So I wouldn't be comfortable dealing with it, but I do think it's worth understanding where BuzzFeed is coming from and not just sort of dismissing it as a reckless decision. I do think it came from a sort of different philosophy than my journalism background, and it's worth considering whether they have a point.
Okay, Tiana Mignon?
Oh, yeah, I definitely agree. I wouldn't have touched it, but I think BuzzFeed adds a very important voice, like I was saying, to the media landscape. If all of us wouldn't have touched it, then nobody really would have known the reader in Des Moines that you were talking about. So as a journalist, I wouldn't have touched it, but as a reader, that's exactly what I want to read. When I went to the CNN report, when I went to New York Times, I kind of wanted to see the information for myself. And so when I checked out the BuzzFeed information, yet again, it was as a reader. And I think it's important to remember that when we have these journalistic talks, that we also need to include what the reader may want also. And how can we approach that? Yes, we want to ensure that, you know, we've met our ethical standards, but is there a way to meet in the middle? And maybe BuzzFeed did that.
Okay, and so when you're saying you go to CNN or the New York Times and you see the reporting about the documents, it may be frustrating for you because you're saying, you're reporting about something, but you're not letting me see what you're reporting about.
Right. And as a reporter, I get that. And I love that about the New York Times. Everything that I'm reading right now, it's verified. It's something that I can, you know, take to knowledge and have discussions with other people. However, as the reader, well, now I'm just feeling as if I'm being talked at and we're talking around the conversation.
But if Ben Smith says, I am competing directly with the New York Times, that call BuzzFeed what you want, but we are doing real journalism, if that is the framework, then did he make the wrong call?
That's when I take issue with it. As a journalist, I don't think he made the right call at all. I mean, you have to verify these kind of things. And I think they took kind of a lazy approach saying, you know, these are a couple examples of the errors that we found. Here's the rest. You just read it yourself.
Okay. Jack Rosenberry didn't expect to be in a cage match with Jim Memmott, but go at it, Jack. What do you think?
I agree with Tiana for a lot of the same reasons she was expressing, that, you know, journalism is valuable to the degree that it's accurate and verifiable, and the information you see you can take to the bank. And everything about this report is exactly the opposite. You know, BuzzFeed even said, it's unverified. We know there's some mistakes. Here, take it and make up your own mind. Well, make up my own mind on the basis of what? Mm-hmm. You know, you're telling me that I shouldn't necessarily believe it. You're telling me that this may be true, may be false. That puts me, and I guess this is one place where I part ways a little bit with Tiana in terms of, she was saying as a reader she wants to see it. As a reader, and I read kind of like Jim, I read, you know, read it kind of sporadically, skipping through it and, you know, kind of glossing over parts of it. And I don't think it added anything to my understanding of the situation, because I was like, well, do I know whether to believe this or not? I really
don't.
But
Jack, do you agree with Ben Smith when he says he only viewed two choices? You publish the whole thing if you're going to acknowledge and report that Obama and Trump were briefed, or you say, that's unverified, we're not even reporting anything on the story. It's not a story at all. He doesn't see that middle ground that the New York Times, that CNN breaking the story, and I'll give them credit where it's due, that there was a meeting, but we're not going to publish the unverified documents.
No, I think that the middle ground that he's dismissing is a valid place to land as a journalist. You know, there's a story in that. There's this pile of unverified information that could be potentially damaging, that a lot of people have their hands on, and the intelligence agencies thought enough of it to kind of put a red flag on top of it. I think that's a legitimate news story. But I, you know, as I was saying a second ago, I think that when you then just put this completely unverified and so far unverifiable pile of information out there, you're just not serving a good journalistic purpose with it.
All right. So an interesting set of views on this and some differences of opinion. I want to listen to what Ben Smith told Brian Stelter of CNN. Before we do that, I will also say, to Jim Memmott's point, Jim read those 35 pages and said, to you, there wasn't a whole lot new there, that we've known for a while that there is a concern about Trump being compromised in terms of ties to Russia. Anne Applebaum, who writes for The Washington Post, among other places, and has been reporting on Russia for years, said exactly what Jim said, that it shouldn't have taken that kind of report to draw a real concern in the American public that this is a man who may be compromised. So I think Anne's agreeing with Jim that this wasn't the, wow, did you know that Trump may have some ties to Russia that are concerned? We've known that. But I think it sounds to me, Jim, that those of us, me probably included, who disagree with the publication say there's enough in there that was not verified, that would be new, that would be of a concern, even though we already had previous concerns about Russia.
I think just a little point, Evan. We keep saying it's not verified. It's not going to be verified that Donald Trump's agents talked to the agents of Vladimir Putin. That's going to be kind of tough to verify because the journalists aren't the CIA. But what you can verify is that there is this report, a report made by a credible agent, a report
were
filled
hired
with,
by opponents during a political
right,
campaign.
But a report filled with proper names that you can verify, facts that you can verify. And so the report on the whole, the least credible part of it is the most salacious.
Okay.
But as you go back into the report, it has a kind of logic. And I think it is news that that was shown to the president and the president-elect.
Okay. All right. Well, let's listen to what Ben Smith had to say to Brian Stelter of CNN. And I should note, Brian Stelter went into that interview, I think, with the same kind of feeling that I had, that maybe that wasn't the right decision. Ben Smith defended it. Let's listen.
If I can see it, if it's not going to scald my eyes out, I think it's a question to reasonably ask your audience. If I'm up here saying I have a secret document, I'm going to summarize for it, but I'm not sure I'm comfortable showing it to you because I'm not sure I can trust you with it. Do you feel that you shouldn't
see it? It's not about trusting the reader. I mean, let's put on screen what you said to the audience at the time. You said Americans can make up their own minds about allegations about the president-elect that have circulated around the intelligence community. But how can Americans or anybody else make up their own minds without providing reporting to them? How do you expect your readers to make up their own minds?
I think what I would say is that I think it's if you are going to report on a document, the presumption is that you share the document with your audience. Let them know what you know.
So that's where this is really interesting, right? I would say, and I think you and I agree on this, big, old-fashioned, established news organizations start from the premise of, why should we share this?
Yes.
You start from the premise of, why shouldn't we?
Why should we suppress this? Yes, that's where I start
And you
from.
Use the word suppress.
I realize you think that's a little tendentious.
It's
why
okay.
shouldn't we share this?
But that's
but yes.
the fundamental, and that's a profound difference that we're describing between legacy media and digital media.
I think that's right.
David Reilly, does that sway you at all?
I guess if a journalist isn't trying to verify facts or provide context, provide appropriate context, then I don't really know what we're there for. And maybe there is a place for something for an organization that just wants to sort of dump documents on the web, and there are some organizations like that, but I don't know if it's the role of a journalist. And often I think it's sort of a cop-out or an abdication of responsibility when journalists have a document, then they can't chase it down and say, well, we're just going to throw it up and let our readers decide what they think. I still would not have run with the story myself.
Well, and so that takes me back to what Jim Memmott was saying about the fact that you think 20 years ago, without the internet, this would be different. In this age, you feel that that document is going to be leaked to somebody eventually, that it will hit the public, and that it has changed your feeling on whether it was appropriate to publish it. Jim, that takes me back to a congressional campaign I reported on, I think it was 2004, six maybe, in which an incumbent member of Congress was running for re-election, and some of the supporters probably working with the opponent dug up divorce records that were sealed. And in this state, sealed. And every state's got sort of different rules when it comes to getting enough cause for divorce. In New York State, I don't know if that's true anymore. I assume it is. You got a lot to get cause. And they send us this document, and the document says that the member of Congress years ago at a dinner party held a shotgun to his wife's head and had done some, what people would say are some pretty bad things. But the ex-wife said, look, we've moved way beyond that. I don't want it reported. We couldn't verify it. We checked with state police. We checked with the sheriff. We couldn't verify it. Nothing verifiable. But they're saying, look, this is a guy who's legislating on gun control, and he's reckless with guns, and I'm saying that's a divorce record. And you know what I heard from a fellow journalist in town who decided to publish it when we didn't? Well, eventually someone was going to put this out there, so we just did. But we didn't. And I don't think that argument holds up for me, just to assume that eventually it will get out there.
Did it get out?
It did. Because other journalists decided, well, somebody will publish this, so we will do it first.
I'm backed into a corner. I may have to revise, but I think that's a good case in point, and we certainly, and I'm sure all of you have had cases like that, but I do think that we're kidding ourselves if we think that editors can still sit in a room now and make decisions such as the one you made, because eventually once it gets out, then you're faced with the issue of what then do you say about it? And it's almost as if you let the other person leak it, and then you, with all your sort of credibility and piety, can then comment on it, as the New York Times did mm-hmm. with the Russia stuff. But again, it's changed so much. I'm going to turn this over to younger people.
Oh, God, don't turn around and look at me.
There you are.
Well, Tiana, on that note then, you know, do you think Jim is making a valid point? I mean, do you feel like you're coming to work in a field of journalism where maybe the people who taught the standards of journalism, mm-hmm. as Jim still teaches today, you know, they worked at a time where things might have been different? Is there a disconnect there?
I don't think so, because just personally, I actually align myself with the older standards. I really believe in, I'm not, just like David said, I think it's lazy to just throw the information up if you can't verify it. The first thing you're taught is that you provide context as a journalist. So I think the only thing that's really changed is that now there are going to be people who are going to put it out there first. But you have to ask yourself, I mean, does it have to be you? And I don't think so, and I'm not going to fall into that. And maybe I'll take the role that Jim mentioned where, you know, we're going to have a different spin on it or something like that. But I don't think that has to be everyone's role.
Well, and Tiana on Twitter, Dave writes to us and says, why expect BuzzFeed to follow the, quote, rules of journalism? I don't know if I consider it a journalism site. Mm-hmm. It's clickbait. If we consider it clickbait, then I think Tiana was making the point earlier. If it's not journalism, then of course their standards are different.
Yeah, and that's kind of the rift that we got into, where just because you don't consider them a real thing, I don't really consider them a traditional news outlet, but you mentioned that they do. And actually, if you go to the story where they release all the papers, they put in parentheses, you know, investigative news reporter. So they definitely see themselves as that.
Sure.
So now we're at this disconnect where a lot of their readers, and obviously Dave, myself included, a bunch of us, we don't see them as traditional, but they do. So maybe we should still hold them to, you know, to the line because of that.
Well, there's not a license to practice journalism.
Yeah.
I mean, people can practice journalism. And I respect Ben Smith for the work that he's done throughout his career. And he clearly now views his own site. He views what BuzzFeed is doing as journalism. Mm-hmm. So I think, to Dave's point on Twitter, I think we should take Ben at his word and evaluate him in a journalistic context,
right,
not in a clickbait context, because that's what he wants us to do. And, you know, since this came out, BuzzFeed published a different story that, to me, demonstrates the great journalism they can do. They put a story out just a few days ago in which they tracked down the story of how there was a sign on the night after the election, November 9th. There were protests in a lot of American cities. And what did the media, you saw a lot of people focusing on one sign that said, and I'm just saying what the sign said, rape Melania. BuzzFeed tracked it down. That was a kind of a plant from a pro-Trump person who wanted to make the protesters look out of control and violent. And my guess is that the Women's March on Saturday, you're going to see the same kind of things. And BuzzFeed did amazing reporting to track that down. So I do think that they are playing by the rules of journalism, Dave, on Twitter. And I think that's what Ben Smith wants us to do. So we're going to evaluate him based on that. Jack, what do you think?
Yeah, if he wants to say we're legit, we're big league, we want to play up there with the standards of, or we want to be considered a full-on professional journalism site, then it's right to hold them to those standards. And yeah, I agree with you absolutely, Evan, that they've done some great journalism. But as I said to one friend in a, I think it was a Twitter conversation, actually, it's like, yeah, they've done, you know, you can find some great examples of good journalism by BuzzFeed this isn't one of them.
Yeah. Well, listeners, I'm seeing the phone ringing now, and we'll get to your calls coming up here. I've got a pile of tweets and some interesting comments as well there. You can call the program toll-free, 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You just heard Jack Rosenberry, a journalism professor at St. John Fisher College. Tiana Magnon is the editor-in-chief of Open Mic Rochester. Jim Memmott is a retired senior editor with the Democrat and Chronicle. He's a professor at the University of Rochester, and he writes the Remarkable Rochester column for the DNC, and David Riley is a former government reporter for the Democrat and Chronicle. One other point that I would pose to the panel before we turn it over to the listeners, which is this. Here's another reason I've got a problem with what BuzzFeed did. We are at a very precarious moment in American journalism. We have a president-elect who is probably more hostile to the free press. Now, we all think that everything is the most whatever at the current moment in history. I haven't studied what every I don't know how Cleveland was. I don't know how Taft was. I don't know how Monroe was to the press. Maybe somebody was more hostile to the press. But I think it's fair to say that we are at a moment that is very precarious for American journalism because the president-elect is hostile to the notion of, I think, free journalism. He's talked about loosening libel laws, making it more like the UK. I think that'd be terrible. And so we've got to be right. We've got to make sure we are not sloppy. We can't give him ammunition to come after the news media. And Janet on Twitter pointed out earlier today, lo and behold, right now, polls show the American public thinks that Trump is unfair to the media more than they think the media is unfair to Trump. So let's not give him this opening to say, look, the media is irresponsible. I mean, David Riley, what do you think?
I don't know that Donald Trump is going to change how he feels about the media based on whether or not it's accurate. I guess you have a point about whether or not to give him legitimate ammunition.
I don't care what Trump thinks. I care that the American people feel like he's making a good point or he's making a bad point. And I want them to not feel like, hey, Trump's making a good point here. That's irresponsible. Because then the next time he makes a claim, outrageous or not, he starts to gain some currency with some people. Jackie.
Yeah, absolutely, Evan. I'm glad you brought that up because I wanted to bring that same idea into the conversation. When journalistic credibility, faith in journalism and, you know, polls that say how the public assesses journalistic credibility are in really, really dire shape, that any time that journalists do something that undermines that credibility further or that, you know, isn't, you know, absolutely up to the standards of accuracy and verification, and ethics that, you know, those of us who've been in the field a long time think help to define journalism. Anytime anything's done to undermine that credibility further, just hurts the whole industry a lot.
David?
And I think that credibility is, to me, it's an extremely important thing, and it's something that I hope or I wish news consumers valued. I don't know to the extent to which they do. I don't know the extent to which there is a large number of people still out there that really value a careful approach to the facts and trying to be objective, and the extent to which people just sort of want to hear what they already believe echoed back to them, and they don't really care about credibility. They care about whether it gives them ammunition for an argument with somebody they disagree with. And that's something I really grappled with towards the end of my time in journalism, and I don't really know what the answer is.
Did that impact your decision to leave journalism?
I mean, it was one of many, I guess.
Okay, wasn't the reason.
No, certainly not.
Okay, Jim Memmott?
I'm not as worried about credibility. We have the new concept of fake news now, so all Donald Trump can say about anything is that that's fake news.
Which is baloney, but...
And all we can turn that on him as well. I'm just surprised that, to get back to the BuzzFeed report, how little lasting impact that's had. That is, the facts that came out then. Donald Trump said no.
But we don't know that they're facts. They're not verified.
Donald Trump said, no, I didn't do that because I'm a germaphobe. So he raised that old standard, the germaphobe defense, and brushed it all aside, which he never really... has to speak to the facts. He speaks to himself, and there you go. The Times, look at the 1995 tax report that the Times dug into the first revelation of Donald Trump's taxes. It was wonderful reporting and so on. And we didn't fuss a lot about, is this true, is this false, did someone prepare this, where did it come from? We believed it. And the Times is doing great work. Don't worry about credibility.
Okay, Tiana?
I worry all the time about credibility. And I think to your point, I see what you're saying. This is a great time for journalists to show, like you were also mentioning, there's really no trust in journalists today. So I think if we can take on the Trump administration and really show our readers that, you know, we've got our nose to the ground, we're reporting on this, here are the facts, you know, we're doing this, I think it can also be a chance to, one, hold Trump to the line, but two, kind of bolster those that trust in us again.
All right, well, let's get our only break of the hour, and we'll come back to your phone call. See what you think about this. Phone lines are filled up. We'll get those in just a second as we continue our discussion about not just whether BuzzFeed made the right call, but media credibility in the age of Donald Trump. It's coming up. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections, in our first hour, the Reshaping Rochester series looks at how to use art to revitalize neighborhoods in a city like Rochester. We'll talk about it. Then in our second hour, we welcome RIT journalism professor Andrea Hickerson. She wrote an op-ed in the Democrat and Chronicle recently talking about Secretary of State nominee Rex Tillerson after her trip to Iraqi Kurdistan, looking at the power of oil. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Diane writes to us and says, my concern is that most people will not read the whole report, as Jim did, but take just the headline as the verifiable truth. How is unverified reporting anything different than fake news? Diane, I would say there's a number of ways. First of all, BuzzFeed took pains to note that what they were putting out there was an unverified document, and that there were even moments of misspellings or moments in the document where you could see that there was a potential error being made. They pointed those out. They weren't putting it out there to say, this is the truth, these are the facts that we have gathered. They were simply saying, this has not been verified, but it is kicking around, and the intelligence community is serious enough about this to brief not only the president, but the president-elect. So that's not fake news. It's just a question of whether it's irresponsible. Fake news is often propaganda. Sometimes it's fake for other reasons, but it is seeking to convince you of something that is not correct. So they weren't seeking to convince you it was true. They were giving you information that's out there and letting you decide whether you think it's true. And that's the problem I have. And that's a problem that we've been brawling over this hour here. Let me get back to the phones then. Mark in Rochester, first up. Go ahead, Mark.
Hello. There are a couple things. One, you made one of the big points I wanted to make, that credibility does matter. I want to be able to believe that the person is writing and has verifiable information. The other piece on BuzzFeed, I understand it was a judgment call, but I think it hurt the real discussion, because the discussion was trying to point to, is there undue influence from Russia on Trump? And that got obfuscated by the discussion on this particular article. So I think we all lost an opportunity to have a discussion that really needs to continue. And the last piece is, I look at the news conference. Now more than ever, journalists are going to have to stick together, even if you have differing views, whether it's MSNBC, Fox, ABC. In the news conference, CNN took the middle ground, reported on it, did not put a lot of the salacious information there, and was shot down by the president. I would have liked to have seen the next reporter who was called on repeat CNN's question and not let the president just shut him down. That's what I wanted to say.
All right. Well, Mark, thank you. Jim Memon, Mark makes an interesting point there. I mean, you're right to say that a lot of people concentrated on the salacious stuff in that report. And if the salacious stuff is the stuff that's most likely not true in a report that's 35 pages and has a number of allegations, but the result of publishing all of that document means most people are focused on the salacious stuff. And then most people, as the days go on, think, well, that's probably not true. Then they might conclude that the whole document's not true, when there may be bits of truth in there that should be very concerning. Does that end up sort of damaging the effort to educate a public? And I think that's
I think Mark made an awfully good point
of
that the focus immediately did go to the hotel room and really away from all of Donald Trump's dealings. I'm sure Ben Smith at BuzzFeed says you can't cut off part of it without and then still understand
the whole.
He probably would
say that. Yeah.
Getting back to something that David said early on, that probably as sort of more traditional journalists, we would have tried to sanitize it somewhat, I think. And I'm possibly you could have done it. It is strange, like that document raises the whole issue of, this isn't about Russia, this is about Donald Trump's dealings in China. It goes on to that the Russia is basically a kind of bluff or a double bluff in what he's really in. That, of course, has never been discussed, and I don't understand it myself. So I think the caller is right, and I really agree with his point about, and I wouldn't have thought perhaps to do that, if people had backed up CNN at that news conference, and if Donald Trump can pick and choose who he's going to talk to and what questions he's going to take, I think the press corps has to show unity in that.
All right, Tiana, if you were in the press corps there and you saw what Donald Trump did with Jim Acosta, saying, I'm not going to answer a question from CNN. And by the way, Donald Trump was conflating CNN and BuzzFeed's report, right, which was unfortunate because CNN didn't get anything wrong in that story. Mm-hmm. But Jim and Mark, and I've heard other journalists say, hey, the response from the other journalists should have been, all right, if you're not going to take Jim's question, then no more questions. I won't ask even if you call on me. Do you think that's right?
Yeah, and I actually agree that there should be some kind of unity. I think my favorite meme on this actually was that once he skipped one journalist's question, every journalist in that room should have then asked the exact same question or, you know, some kind of version of it. But just to show that even though we don't always agree within, you know, within our structures.
And there should be competition, right?
And there should be competition. It makes us all better. We're facing something that we've really never faced before. And we're going to have to band together and really work together to get answers out of this administration.
David, would you have done that? Would you have said, don't take my question then if you're not going to take Jim's?
I'd like to think that I would have.
It's very idealistic in retrospect to say it, right?
But how many of us would have liked to go back to our editor and say, sorry, I didn't get that story. I was busy defending Jim Acosta.
And I've been waiting for months to ask him directly about something, and I'm just going to, who knows when the next news conference is going to be.
Right.
So it's idealistic, but maybe not realistic.
It would be wonderful if there was more solidarity in journalism, but it's hard to come by day to day.
Okay, Jack?
The other thing is, about that news conference, it was such a zoo. I mean, and every, you know, people shouting, Trump handing things off, Breitbart News having a front row seat so that, you know, when Trump needed a softball question, he could just kind of turn to them. I mean, it's
people cheering in the
background. Yeah, his staff there cheering and clapping in the background. So, you know, for a journalist or the journalistic group collectively to have had the presence of mind to do that would have been nothing short of a miracle, just given the setting. So ideally, yes, realistically, you know, not surprising that it didn't play out that way.
And I go back to David's point. I mean, I think if he were hosting weekly news conferences, as he should, then it might be easier to say, hey, you know what, right now, we're not doing this. I'm not asking this thing. But if you've got your first question directly to Donald Trump in months, it's hard to pass on it. Because there are so many. Bill in Brighton next. Go ahead, Bill.
Thank you. I think despite the fact that traditional press may be in the quote, minority, I think since the revolutionary times, it is more important than ever that the press be there to call to account the falsehoods, misstatements, untruths, whether they be a Democratic senator, a Republican congressman, Donald Trump, or whoever. It is so important because in this insidious computer world, Amazon designs these packages to give to their users what they like. And one can go every day and listen to a whole stream of things in favor of everything Donald Trump says and versus the negative. We need this independence. We need the press to stand up and say, Mr. Trump, he deserves to have that question answered before you answer any of our questions. We need accountability so desperately today. And I hope the press fulfills that, which I think is their singular obligation and strength.
Well, Bill, thank you for the phone call. Anybody want to disagree or add anything there?
No, that was incredibly well stated, Bill. Thank you.
All right, back to the phones then. Andrew in Irondequoit. Go ahead, Andrew.
Hi, you guys. I'm just a carpenter. I don't know anything about what's going on in places like Washington. I only know what you people in the journalist world tell me. So it would be nice if you would work really hard at not reporting salacious stuff, you know, just... If we want verified stuff, because we don't have any else. How am I? Does this make any sense to you guys?
Absolutely, sure. Andrew. This is why I came in. You know, this is why we've tangled a little bit over this, because to Ben Smith's point, putting it out there and letting people evaluate. You know, you're busy working. You're not a paid journalist.
I can't figure this stuff out. I can look. Yes. I make marks on boards. That's the only place my saw can go is that mark. It's got to be put down just right.
Oh, well, Andrew, I happen to be with you. People like Ben Smith, who, again, I will say this again, I respect him as a journalist. He obviously disagrees, and a number of people have disagreed. But I think your point's well stated. It's hard enough out there just getting by, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I can't figure this stuff out. You guys, I hope you guys work on accuracy.
I'm with you. Andrew, again, though, anybody want to jump in, disagree, agree?
I was honestly confused, and I am a journalist. I was reading through it, and I'm like, oh, my God, I have no idea what a lot of this means. So, and that's, why I like the New York Times piece. It added the context that I needed, we needed as readers.
Mm-hmm.
I think no one should – carpenters do good work. Journalists stab about in the dark. But one thing we haven't brought up, and I think my case has been totally destroyed this afternoon, but one of the things about the so-called leaked documents, the BuzzFeed documents, that many people had a question, wait a minute, why did James Comey come out saying that they were investigating Hillary Clinton's emails that showed up in either Anthony Weiner's computer or someplace else? Why was that public and why wasn't this public? And I do think that when you read that report, you find yourself asking a little bit of the same question, whether there was fairness. And so maybe the report gives a little bit of sort of context or ammunition almost to that argument.
And Sarah writes to us and says the following. She says, I think the fact that Trump is so anti-news is more reason for the documents to be released. I am very concerned that he will try to muzzle reporters about anything and discredit everything they do. If a reporter or organization can clearly indicate something is not verified, they should release it to force Trump and his administration to stay reasonably transparent. In other words, Sarah is saying, if he's going to attack journalists and try to muzzle people, then put the report out there under the auspices of, all right, Trump administration, now you have to deal with this directly in the public eye, because otherwise you wouldn't. I take that point, Sarah. I'm still worried about damage to journalistic credibility. But Jim, is there a point that she's making that we should consider?
Yeah, I think she says it better than I can, but that she's saying the press probably has to be almost more transparent and more aggressive at this point and force the hand of the new administration. The new administration or the incoming administration is pretty deft at avoiding that, as have been previous administrations,
yes.
Let's be fair.
This is not the first administration
right.
that is good at dealing and dodging and circumventing the media.
But I don't know. Let's go way back to Billy Bush and the ABC tapes and so on. I guess one of the things about that was so easy for the press was you had something on tape and you had Donald Trump's voice and you had him talking about things, either bragging or making things up or just being disgusting. There was no doubt about putting that out. And obviously there's concern about this because you don't have tape of him talking to a Russian businessman. You don't have his operatives talking to people like that. I don't think you're ever going to get that.
Go ahead, Jack.
To Sarah's point, I think she's absolutely right that, you know, journalists have to, you know, force the administration's hand to the degree that they can, because as Evan was saying, you know, this is not the first administration or incoming administration at this point to deal in news management and spin, but they really kind of take it to a new level. Getting information out there to really kind of force them to deal with it is absolutely critical. But at the same time, it has to be virtually, if not literally, undeniable. It's like, you know, this is really hardcore, nailed down fact that X happened. And, you know, yes, X puts, you know, the administration in some sort of bad light. But, you know, you have to deal with it because it is so fully vetted and verified and accurate. And the BuzzFeed report is totally the other end of the spectrum.
But let's just say this, Jack, because I got a lot of problems with the way CNN has run their business the last few years, not the least of which is the people they've been paying money to just... But they were right on this report. BuzzFeed put unsubstantiated documents out. CNN's report was right, and I think it did everything that you think the media needs to be doing with Trump, which is being very carefully sourced, putting information out there that is verified, but tough and really discerning. They did that with this story, and they chose not to put the unverified documents out. But they reported on the meetings, the concern in the intelligence community. They did that, didn't
they? Yes.
So they deserve, in this case, credit where it's due.
Well, sure, and you know, I'm talking strictly about the full report. I mean, half an hour ago, you and I were both agreeing that, you know, CNN's actions were probably a good place to go, even though Ben Smith disagrees with it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so back to your phone calls, because we've got a lot of comments coming in on this. I know a lot of people have opinions on the media. Margo and Victor. Go ahead, Margo.
Well, I think I might be making your guys' point, but I'm going to tilt the mirror for a second. I think one of the things we've dealt with over the last year and a half is a guy who doesn't apologize for anything. And one of the points I wanted to make was, as you just said, whatever you don't like about CNN, they didn't do anything wrong. And I think collectively in the media and in the public, everyone agrees, except the people in Trump's office and his administrative staff, that or himself, that they're wrong, and they're not. And what bothers me so much is that this guy can't turn around and say, you know what, I was wrong. CNN, you know, you did accurately report. I confused, conflated whatever you with BuzzFeed, but he never does that. And instead, just throws hate and just disseminates more of this hate the press. You guys, you know, the press is all a bunch of hardworking people who are there to get information and present it to us in an unbiased way so that we, the public, can draw conclusions. And I think they do a pretty good job of that. You know, it's gotten a little funky on TV over the last year or two. But it's just sad that Trump can't come out, President-elect can't come out and go, you know what, I made a mistake because by conflating the two, I'll take your comment, Jim, next time. Yeah, maybe next time, if there is a next time.
Yeah.
You know, so it's sad. And, you know, that was my comment.
Margo,
nobody looks to Trump to be held accountable for anything.
Well, Margo, thank you. Here's Donald Trump this morning on Twitter. He says, quote, "The same people who did the phony election polls and were so wrong are now doing approval rating polls. They are rigged just like before," end quote. First of all, they're not rigged. Second of all, the election polls were largely right. This is what people are sort of missing about the election we just had. The polls weren't that wrong. The polls predicted a 3-point Hillary Clinton win. That was sort of the center point of the polls. She won by 2 points. She won by almost 3 million votes. So the national polls were pretty close. On the state by state, he overperformed in a lot of places, and that's where things were more wrong. They were not rigged. And there is a lot of soul searching for where some of those were wrong. But overall here, we're not rigging the polls. And when Donald Trump doesn't accept the fact that he's got a terrible approval rating going into office, he wants you to not trust the media. That's what he wants. Margo's right. It would be great if he had the humility to say, sorry, I conflated BuzzFeed and CNN. CNN, I apologize. But that's not the game plan. The game plan is nobody should trust the media, and therefore the media can't report critically. Is that a wrong analysis, David? I mean, doesn't that seem like that's the game plan?
Yeah, and I think part of the reason he won't apologize is because I think it was strategic. I think he intended to conflate the two of them. I think he intended to pit media outlets against each other to argue about whether BuzzFeed dealt with it right, to obfuscate which media outlet got it wrong. And indeed, here we are talking about it. And I guess part of my frustration with the story has been that it distracted from a lot of easily verifiable, concerning things we could be talking about the incoming administration. I mean, at that same press conference, he's talking about his plan to part ways with his business, which doesn't really pass the ethics smell test to any reasonable human being. But that was sort of drowned out by this debate, which I think was sort of the intent.
He's very good at that. And Veronica, my colleague from down the hall, asked an interesting question. I'll go around the room here real quick. How are we defining verified in the context of this conversation? You got to go there. But that's a fair question. Jack, how do you define verified? I guess it's subjective. That's a subjective thing, isn't it?
Well, in the case of, you know, traditionally journalistic verification is based on, you know, attributed statements to people in a position to know, ideally on the record, and identified. And even better case than that, an independently prepared or sourced document of some sort. That doesn't seem to apply to the quote-unquote dossier. It is a very difficult kind of thing to really put a checklist together for.
Okay, Jim Memmott, what's verified to you?
In this case, I think the only thing you can verify is the document itself. That this is an accurate sort of copy. It's not a fake copy of some negative information gathered by political operatives. You're not going to verify that Vladimir Putin sat down with Donald Trump and decided how you're going to divide up St. Petersburg and put in a few hotels. And I think that in this case, usually in verification, you say, what is your source? I think everybody knows in Washington knows who this British operative was. And then the next question becomes, do you usually trust him? They usually trusted him. And so I think then the conclusion was, this is probably an accurate report. So the content of the report is probably tougher to verify, but the fact
point
of the report.
Point by point.
Yeah, okay. Right. The fact of the report, you can verify. And you can verify that it was shown to Donald Trump and to Barack Obama.
Okay, Tiananmen Yun, verification. What does verification mean to you?
I've always said verification is just, at the end of the story, if my readers can go back and speak to all of the same sources that I just spoke to and get the exact same story, then it's pretty verified. My facts are on, the comments are on, the people that I've spoken to are on. And it's kind of a quick quizlet that I do to make sure that it's on. But this is bigger than that. This isn't event coverage that my readers can go ask the organizer how many people showed up. This is something that, like Jim said, we're never going to be in that room. So I guess in this step, it's just how many people do you have backing up those claims?
Yeah, exactly. Because you can verify, did a tree fall on a house? We can verify that,
right?
Yes or no.
Mm-hmm.
Did Putin meet with Trump to divide St. Petersburg's hotel properties? We may not be able to verify with video and with a transcript of the meeting and with Trump or Putin, but what? Maybe we have multiple sources, though,
right,
who were there that day.
Yeah, I mean, it's not cut and dry. You definitely prefer documentation. You prefer video, something that's objective. But, I mean, if you have voices and now you're getting into the second battle, is this verification enough?
Yeah, and how do you feel, briefly, how do you feel about unnamed sources?
I hate unnamed sources. I try and just get away from it if I can. I will beg you to go on the source,
yeah,
somehow. Can I get this information from someone else that, you know, has the same power and knowledge? But I avoid them as much as I can.
Yeah, I take that point. David Riley, verification and unnamed sources. What do you think?
Yeah, I think I agree largely with Tiana that you're looking for multiple people who are not connected to one another, who hopefully are not.
Mm-hmm.
Talking to each other and sort of comparing stories, who can give you the same or similar information. You're always looking for documents of some kind. I never liked unnamed sources, and I thought the DNC had a very good policy where they required three unnamed sources disconnected from one another to verify the same information
before
they were willing to run with it. I thought that was a very strong standard.
I agree very much. Simeon writes to us on Twitter. He says, the irony is that the, quote, careful approach is perceived as manipulation and withholding facts, which in turn undermines credibility. Jack, you prefer the careful approach. Where is Simeon going wrong there?
Can you read the quote to me again?
He says, the irony is that the careful approach is perceived as manipulation and withholding facts, which in turn undermines the media's credibility.
I'm not sure that it's withholding facts so much as making sure those facts are independently, you know, verified.
You say there's the word, yeah.
But most importantly, accurate before that they go out.
Yeah, I would say to Simeon, I will not withhold any facts that I have verified. I promise you. I will distribute and release and publish once I can verify.
Yes.
But you will not have to worry that I am, you know, sort of breaking standards or just loosely distributing based on time or competition. So if that undermines my credibility, I can live with that, as opposed to my credibility being undermined by being viewed as sloppy or potentially unfair or publishing unverified information. Some final thoughts as we go around here. And Jim Memmott, I'm going to give you the floor here because, you know, as you said here, you came in here ready for battle. And some of our listeners have said, why aren't you more concerned about the media's credibility here? You said you're not that concerned right now.
I think, please don't, this doesn't get out of this room, right?
Yeah, I promise.
Is anyone listening?
No. No, this stays between us.
I think that the last point was a good one. I think we're damned if we do and we're damned if we don't. Mm-hmm. If you hold back information, especially in this day and age when everyone seems to know it but nobody dares put it into print, you're seen as being on the side of the devil. If you put it in, you're seen as being on the side of the devil. We've had this problem in journalism for a long time, and what you do with rumors. Mm-hmm. That is, you hear rumors all the time, and then people accuse you of covering things up. So,
and you do your best to source and to...
Yeah.
Verify.
Deanna Magnon from Open Mic Rochester, great seeing you again. Thanks for being here. Jack Rosenberry making us think, not just the students at St. John Fisher, but in the blog postings on Twitter as well. Great to see you, Jack.
Thanks.
David Riley, we miss you in journalism. It's nice talking to you. It's a great
time.
Thank you. And Jim Memmott, we enjoy still having you in journalism. I really do. Thank you for being
here as well, Dave, as always. Evan, thank you.
And our thanks to Rob, the engineer. Megan Mack is the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a great afternoon, and we'll talk to you Wednesday on Member Supported Public Radio.